Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us to the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct the hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, it's time to rethink your level A protection. Multi-threat suits made of lightweight Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric are part of the most functional non-encapsulated level A ensembles that bring an essential modernization to hazmat PPE. Certified NFPA 1994 Class 1 suits with Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric offer unencumbered movement, increased range of motion, improved peripheral visibility, excellent dexterity, and reduced heat stress so you can stay engaged longer. You can learn more at GoreTexProfessional.com. Let's get to the show. Hello.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. This is another episode of The Hazmat Guys, episode 326, if I am not mistaken.
Yes.
I believe that was the number that was called into my ear just before this started. So, episode 326. I still can't believe how many episodes. It is endless. But, boy, we are January, and we're January 2022, if... Yes.
Wow.
The currently. Just yes. Keep going by. As far as we know, we've got a couple conferences coming up. I'm doing Wisconsin in March.
The Whammer.
I think I'm doing Wisconsin in March. I have to reach out to them.
Yes.
Because I haven't heard back. And Baltimore, hopefully, I'll be at. What about you, Bob?
I think I won't be at Whammer, but I think I'm going to be doing the Midwest, which unfortunately just went virtual. Too much.
No, it didn't. Did it really?
Yeah. And you know, he was doing his best, Rick Emery, to not do it, but it's like the hotel is the one that's doing it. So he's kind of out of control with it, and he's very upset. And
he's gonna lose a lot of hair this year because he lost almost all of it last year. Oh, yeah, poor Rick. So. Oh, Rick, if you're out there, big hug.
Yeah, it's terrible. But anyway, so we have a lot here.
We do. We actually have. What I mean. All right, so little heads up, right? We've been doing the lab stuff, and one of our friends, Todd Burton, sent us a chart of all the different labs out there and all the different chemicals, and it's almost endless. Yeah. I would say easily 50 chemicals looking at this chart.
Oh yeah, probably maybe more. And I'm going to check. I'm 99% sure we are going to add this to the show. I don't think there's any problem with us putting this on the thing to download. But this is basically a tabloid. If you're not familiar with that, tabloid is 11 inches by 17 inches. That is a double piece of paper
of just chemicals. This is a huge piece of paper, and it's just full of information. So a lot of what we're going to talk about in the show, you're going to be able to visualize in this thing. And this thing, it's a great paper version of what the ERDSS or the Chemical Companion has in a digital format, but it's not right. always the most convenient thing to like, okay, I need to get my tablet out or my laptop out and stuff too, where you can bring a piece of paper that's laminated into the scene and just check, check, check. And you're just playing bingo basically.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. It's very, very extensive. We definitely are not going to be sitting over the course of these next couple episodes talking about each one, but we'll definitely hit on a bunch of them, at least the more common ones. And if you really want, we can turn around and break down each one of these chemicals. But the idea was really just to kind of get you familiar with, you know, how we're going to be dealing with stuff. So, you know, a lot of our flammable liquids, we're going to be dealing with the same way. Similar PPEs, things like that. Our acids, we're going to be dealing with in similar ways. You know, our oxidizers, stuff like that. So, it's pretty good. And it also goes a little into hazcatting flow.
Yeah, it's a great tool. We absolutely have a couple of copies on our rig just in case we need to kind of get a heads up on what we're looking at, which is, the topic of today's show is we're going to be going into it. I mean, first, we're going to be going into pot extraction, which honestly could be its own show in itself. And Todd is one of those guys that's like the ace of this thing. But pot extraction is... Dude, it's everywhere now because everything's like legalized.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Nobody cares. And it's they're not doing it right. You know, like if you want to do it right, watch YouTube about people blowing themselves up and start your checklist going backwards saying, okay, don't do this.
Well, yeah. I mean, so just to kind of like start off the show with the pot extraction, and yeah, pot extraction is, it probably will be its own show. But there have been some major incidences in dealing with the chemicals with the pot extraction. And there are Todd Burton, who we just referenced before, has got some great footage on some of the flammable materials that we're going to be talking about igniting, how it goes, where it goes, how it finds the low points. Really, absolutely. Maybe we'll try to link up those YouTube videos in the, the show notes. Because pot extraction, it doesn't seem like there's a lot to it, but there can be. And like Bob said, man, it's we're going from league. We're in like this quasi, right? Not legal, legal. Nobody's going to break my chops for it, so I'm going to do it. I'm still working in illegal mode, so really all I've done is stepped up my makeshift lab that I was doing before, right? It's not like anyone's turning around and now it's like, oh, it's legal. I'm doing it at home. I'm now going to buy industrial equipment. It's like, ooh, this is legal. I'm going to buy myself 10 of what I was doing before. just like a typical firefighter would, if one is good, 10 is better. Yeah. But, you know, we're saying pot extrication. What exactly does that mean? What are they doing? Basically, what they're doing is they're taking the THC out of the pot plant itself, which is really the only part of the plant for people getting high that matters. It's that THC. They're taking it out. They're concentrating it into a really, really small amount of product. And this is really popular because all of the parts of the plant that were originally just kind of thrown away, right? They had the THC, but it wasn't
the
really
shake, as they call it.
Yes, the shake. You know, the stalks, the stems.
Allegedly.
The parts that were just not worth it are now worth it, right? So in a very similar way that you can take propane gas and kind of condense it down into a liquid, you get a tremendous amount of, I guess for lack of better words, high from a large volume of plant into literally a couple of grams of THC, maybe a few I don't know, half a kilogram, but a handful can get you high for life.
Yeah.
Because it only takes such a small amount. And then, you take that small amount, and just like any other ingredient, you add it into a vapor pen or into brownies, or you create gummies with it. So to be able to take all of this stuff and condense it into a small little packet, I mean, economically, it just makes sense.
Yeah. And as every process, and we're not going to go into the whole thing. We're going to kind of go into, because I'm not telling you jerks how to do it.
No,
it's surprisingly easy.
We do have classes on it on the university.
Yes. And given by our illustrious Todd Burton as well, which I highly recommend you checking out those classes because it's very enlightening. You're taking this bulk organic plant and they're making it purer and purer and purer. And with concentration, the sizing gets smaller. Well, the mass of it gets smaller and smaller because they're removing the organic. They're removing the, you know, all these other things. And then you're just left with pure THC, right? And now there's multitude of different methods and, like I said, steps. But what really we're doing, they for the most part, they're using a few different chemicals. And these are the chemical methods that they would use, although there are mechanical methods as well. Like certain heating techniques would be able to yield the same amount, but without the purity. And that's kind of the key to this whole thing. So their whole aim is to make a super pure product, because then just like a pinhead of that into something like a vape pen or something like that, and they can be getting crushed right next to you and you have no idea because there's no smell. There's no organics burning.
And from a dealer's point of view, right? Like if this little tiny amount I can sell off little tiny pieces, I could walk around with hundreds of thousands of dollars in my pocket or in my car and nobody's going to know the difference.
There was a dealer that was selling pens. And in the pen was like a dot of pure THC. And all he was doing is selling the pens for $25 and people buy them like crazy.
Is that the penisland.com that you're always talking about?
Yeah, penisland.com. Best pen distributor I've seen. Check out. They have great deals. Mention us. And so like it was, you know, until the cops caught on that the guy was selling pens, it didn't add up. But it's such a small quantity. They're not dropping bags of weed all around the place. So one of the chemicals that they use, and is pretty much the primary chemical they use to strip the THC very nicely off. It works extraordinarily well in doing it, is butane. Right. Pure butane. And the reason that they're using butane is because they're using it as an organic solvent. Right. So that they're taking this THC that is like seriously like just clinging to the outside of the plant and they just wash it away. Right. It's like you had dirt on your hands and you just put it under the water. The water is like the solvent. It takes the dirt off. You got to add soap. I get it. But maybe that wasn't a good example.
Well, it's all right. So like
kind of.
Yeah, kind of. So
it's like soap and water together.
Yeah, for the firefighters that are out there, after you have a saw and you've cut a tar on your roof, you take the blade and you soak it in gasoline or diesel.
Ah, good. Yes.
Right. So you have a very similar, right? You have a very thick, oily, I'm going to say non-polar, you know, solid. And you are now you're literally dissolving it in another non-polar substance. And that's exactly what's happening here with the butane or any of the high pressure hydrocarbons, high vapor pressure hydrocarbons. It is coming in contact, right? And it's literally dissolving it. It's coming in contact as a liquid,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the process of this, they are literally auto refrigerating the product, so when it actually washes across the THC, it is dissolving it as an actual liquid, which brings the point of like, okay, now I have expansion ratios and how much product is being used in such a small area. That's where a lot of this stuff starts to be like the aha factor, right? Is that, you know, is that they're using it in its liquid form.
Right, right. So now you got to think about this. I don't want to give them all of the information. Because I know people will be like, oh, Bob and Mike told me how to do, like, extract this stuff.
If anyone is stupid enough to do an extraction based upon this show, you're out of your mind. Go to YouTube. And that's actually a really good point for any of these, like, labs that we're talking about. Like, we're talking about the chemicals and stuff like that. But if you really want to understand the process, and there is legitimate knowledge in understanding the process, right? Because then you understand the equipment, you see what's going on, you can recognize things. Right. Go onto YouTube and watch videos on it, because they will give you so much more information than we ever could. Mainly because I personally have never made anything, you know, like this. So, you know, I could tell you about the chemicals. I could talk to you about, you know, how to mitigate them, how to pick them up, you know, what the concerns are. But if you want to actually see the process happening so you can recognize something, absolutely. You know, YouTube is beyond the way to go when it comes to looking these things up and getting an education.
And then you get the bonus of watching the guy blow up.
Yes.
Which is always funny. And you play the little jackass music. Right. You know, like, anyway.
And then you strip the video, put it on your computer, and then you loop the moment where his fingers come off. So you just watch them kind of like flop off and come back together.
That's great. I love it. So you got this butane. And you got to remember what butane is, why they have it how they got it. And the butane is a refiller for a lighter. Ergo, it is flammable. Right? So now we're taking the whole can, and I'm talking like a Krylon spray paint can, like a full size can, and we're dumping it into this thing. And now out the bottom comes both the solvent and the solute, the solvent being the butane and the solute being the THC. And it's doing its thing, right? Because it's a very high vapor pressure, auto-refrigerated liquid. And so it just starts softly bubbling, softly boiling.
If you didn't hear yet, we are transitioning to a new format that is going to give you, the listener, even more content.
Yeah, for example, in our technician and specialist levels, we are adding even more video content, access to our entire show catalog, and even access to a monthly small group Q&A session to answer any questions that come up, as well as so much more.
All of this for less than a cup of coffee that you premium snobs like to drink for the entire month of access.
This is the stuff that you've been asking for. So take a look at what we can do to take you to the next level of hazmat.
Go to our website, thehazmatguys.com. You can sign up for our premium tiers that will give you even more hazmat goodness. And think about that, right? Like, so we have, think about, let's just real quick, like when we talk about like vapor pressures and why something like this would be used. Yes, propane is much easier to get a hold of, and it kind of sort of lands within this category. But if you think about, right, when we talk about making a container based upon the chemical and physical properties of the chemical, and now think about a lighter and think about a barbecue propane tank, right? Which one is designed to hold higher pressure?
The propane tank or the lighter.
Like, the lighter is just a little piece of plastic. It doesn't take much to liquefy the butane.
Right. Good point.
Right. So, you know, when we start identifying, you know, containers and chemical physical properties, like here I have a liquid. So how quickly is it going to be boiling off? Yeah, it's going to be doing it easily. But it's also going to be, you could be potentially dealing with a lot of liquid in that initial phase.
Mm-hmm. So now here, you almost want to yell at the YouTube going, if you just left it there, you would still have your fingers.
Yeah.
Because, like, if the guy just let if he took that tray and he put it out on the picnic bench outside in the summer and he just let chemistry do its chemistry thing, the butane would remove itself into the open atmosphere, and all you would be left with is this like sludge in the bottom, which is very refined. I don't want to say the wrong word there.
Concentrated?
Greatly concentrated THC plus a ton of other crap that's in there. And you, again, you can go through other processes like winterization and stuff like that, where you have a product that you can actually utilize. You've done the box, you know, but what happens is they do this in their kitchen, confined space, limited ventilation, and then they get impatient and they start heating it. And if I heat up a liquid, I would volatilize it quicker.
Makes sense to me.
Add heat. What kind of heat do I have in my kitchen? Oh, my stove.
Yes.
Perfect.
Just put that bad boy in my burner for a little while.
And 3, 2, 1, explosion. And that's funny. It's funny. So what we're looking for, and again, the chemical the properties that we're interested in from the response side is, where am I metering for this stuff? And what am I metering for? Right. And we've established that we're looking for flammability. And again, check out the video. I have it written down here. But the thing is that the butane is very, very heavy and it goes very, very, very low. So I'm talking like, don't go around your calf or your knee and you're like, wow, there's nothing here. Check around where the cushion of your foot is that's in contact with the floor. We're talking like a half inch off the ground, that low.
Literally allow the probe to just drag across the floor as you're walking around.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right. Like even the DEA, we had a conversation with the DEA guys, and they, when they do these, like, you know, serving warrants and they're breaking down doors and swinging through the windows and stuff like that, they have to bring a four gas meter. Because there could be a clan lab or whatever, they got to kind of get an indication. And they were coming in with it, you know, the gun's up, and they got the meter up there by their face because they got their hands on the gun. And so we're like, well, why don't you put them on an ankle holster kind of thing? And then all you got to do is, if you hear the thing beep, stop.
Yeah.
And it works so much better.
I don't need to like be looking at the screen. No. I just hear it go off.
Yeah.
And we've seen this firsthand with propane, which is not as heavy as butane.
Right.
That it really does. You're talking about with propane, you're talking like maybe an inch off the ground. And yes. Anything above the inch off the ground, we weren't even getting hits that there was flammable material present. So it really, really is important, you know, walking into these places that, you know, you have high volumes of something like propane, something like butane, you know, it's going to drop down. Mm-hmm. You know that there's other vials floating around, right? So if there's a fire, the vials are going to eventually be releasing. And yeah, you have to like, if there's already a fire, what are you going to do? You got to, you know, go in and put it out. But if it's not, to really be careful of, you know, the low lying areas.
Yeah.
Good. So, all right. So what kind of, you know, stupid question, Bob, what kind of PPE are you going to walk in with?
I'm not worried about toxic. Yeah, no, I'm not worried. I was going to make a joke there, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not worried about toxic, but I am worried about flammability. So, I mean, it's going to be bunkier and SCBA in order to walk in this place. And, you know, and I'm talking about full bunker gear and SCBA because if it flashes, it's going to be a flash. It's not going to, unless it catches something else, it's not going to stay on fire, but you'll lose all your hair in the flash.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, including up your bunker gear pants, which we've seen happen before as well.
It happens, yes.
All right, so I got a question for you.
Go.
All right, so we respond in to one of these labs, and we do an everything right. We open the door. You know, let's say there's really not an emergency happening. That way, we can take our time. You know, we're going in with the FBI or the DEA, whatever. And so we open the door, we've got our meter down low, and we immediately pick up a flammable atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
We're in our bunker gear.
Okay.
From an incident command or from a tactical operations point of view, what what are our options next? Like, what would you be looking to do as your next step? And how would we set that up? In
this situation, there's two things that have to happen, and I'm trying to think of the best way to do it. You stop the leak and you change the air.
Okay.
Okay. So, if I am at the front door and it has come to find me, right, when my meter is going off at the front door, but I'm not at the source, I have a little bit of a problem because I can't just walk through this area without the concern of a flash happening.
Right.
And we've talked about this a lot, either between me and you or at the firehouse or whatever. Once you do your tech ref, once you do your research on the chemicals, there's two more things that you have to do before you PPE, right? And that is your mission specific. What are you doing? And second thing is, what environmental controls can I do to change the thing? Because this whole scenario is a street fight. There is no rules in street fights. And so I would start ventilation, fans. I don't think I would hydraulically vent because you're just going to ruin the guy. The whole house. You're going to flood the guy's house.
Well, I don't even know if you really could hydraulically vent, right? Because you would have to then be inside the area that could flash to point a hose line out.
Right. And it probably wouldn't be very effective. But, I mean, pointing some fans in the window, maybe opening a second door on the opposite side to get a flow going through the house, and walking in that air cone towards the source, I might be able to get up there and seriously put saran wrap across the top of the thing. Or you understand what I'm saying? Like I can stop or even just remove it from the house and try to stop it from happening. Stop the off-gassing from happening. If you stop the source, then your ventilation technique is going to get much faster.
Right. Now, we have the ability to use a non-sparking fan.
Intrinsically safe.
Intrinsically safe. There we go. I couldn't think of the word for it. The way these things work, right, it can both suck and blow, and it has this huge kind of tube that allows you to clear out a manhole of toxic and flammable material.
Yes.
If I were to take that either inside or try to somehow get the tube inside, I now have a tube that's laying on the ground that would forcibly pull material out.
Yep.
What do you think that would be something that would be a viable, or are we then, even though it's labeled intrinsically safe, do we want to trust pushing flammable materials through that? Like that then becomes one of those like,
we bought this fan 2 or 3 years ago. And it came in and it is certified intrinsically safe. And so we were joking around. We're like, so you got an intrinsically safe fan? We're like, yeah. He goes, how do you know it's intrinsically safe? I'm like, because it has a label on it. He goes, yeah, but that was when you bought it.
Yeah, not it's been bouncing around the rig.
Like, do you have to get that? Is intrinsic safety recertified? And I honestly do not know the answer to that. So I'm like, so they're like, would you put a flammable atmosphere through the fan? I'm like, so far we've been successful because we've done it. We pulled absolutely in the LEL of carbon monoxide out of areas. We've pulled natural gas in its LEL between the LEL and UEL out of a location. I will say the evacuation, and not to get into like, you know, ventilation profiles and stuff like that, because that's a whole show in itself. But if I was to employ the tube at the bottom where I'm going to find this stuff, it's like drinking with a straw the soda out of the cup. It's extraordinarily effective. The problem with doing that whole situation is that when you don't have an intrinsically safe fan, you cannot pull flammable vapors through a fan that the motor is shooting lightning bolts out of the sides on a constant.
With every rotation of the fan.
Right. And so you say, okay, let me turn the fan and I'll blow air into the bottom, displacing this heavy butane gas. But the problem is that butane is butane and it still wants to go down. So you're fighting butane and it's not going to be effective.
No, you would almost, in order to really do that properly, you almost have to have an entrance and an exit.
Yes.
Right? Like if I had something on the other, if I had a door in the back that I could almost seal off the front door, have a spot for the fan to go in, be blowing air in, and then an exit on the out, I could get a good chunk out. But I think people forget that. They forget that I can push fresh air in. All I may be doing is mixing up the air on the floor, pulling it out of its flammable range for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment I stop, if I have not evacuated that butane, once I stop mixing the air around, it's going to want to settle back down.
Yes.
So, yeah. So just blowing the fan is not necessarily what we want to do. We want to actually be thinking about how we can properly ventilate as we move along.
Yeah, I'm writing that down. I think I'm going to add that to the nugget list, because that requires a lot of graphical demonstrations on that one. I have a good amount of stuff in that. That's going to be a good nugget.
Ventilating?
Yeah, like, you know, ventilating confined spaces is kind of a technique, and we can explain on that.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's a science in and of itself.
Yeah. What else we got on this thing?
Well, you know, riding along, there's listen, other than the THC, right, which don't ingest, there's not a ton of super, super toxic materials that are floating around. You know, you have a few other solvents that are already in the liquid form, like acetone and rubbing alcohol.
One more.
Oh, what a guy. Oh, ethanol. And ethanol. Ethanol, right.
So pure white lightning hooch vodka. They will use that as well as a stripping agent.
Yeah, so you have your acetone, you have your rubbing alcohol, you have your regular ethanol. And these kind of all land within a very similar, you know, similar class of liquids, where we have a decently high vapor pressure, right? I'm not going to say that alcohol is like boiling off, you know, right in front of you like butane would. But it puts off some vapors. Acetone definitely puts off vapors. Rubbing alcohol puts off a pretty decent amount of vapor. So you have a flammable material that's giving off vapors. It's not going to give off the same vapors as a liquid butane boiling off, just because it doesn't have that kind of vapor pressure.
Right.
But it is still something that we need to be concerned about, and it is something that we may have to address if it is out of its container. And this is a kind of a big thing that I definitely want to hit on, right? We walk into these places, if they're in the container they came in, leave them in their container.
Right.
I don't need to be taking acetone and pouring it into an overpack drum.
No.
You know, like, just leave it in the container that that it was supposed to be in.
Yeah.
The only time I would want to ever deal with any of these is if for some reason I had an open container, I had a broken container, they were not in the approved container that they were going to come in. Somehow that material got there. So try to find the container that material was in, because that's its proper container. You know, a lot of these vapors, these liquids, they're going to be showing up on our LEL meters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we definitely want to have the CAD bead or the NDIR for the sensor, but it's not going to necessarily tell you if the material is in the air, because, you know, if you sit and you do the math, 1% of the LEL, you know, it's a lot of product before you start getting a ding. I would definitely consider bringing in, and I would do this with the butane too, something like a
metal oxide.
Yes, metal oxide. I was going to call it by its name that we call it by. But yeah, the metal oxide, the very, very low, not quantitative measuring, but qualitative, just letting you know, hey, there is a flammable material that is present. It's not necessarily going to burn right now, but there is something here.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping that meter with you and on will not only indicate that there is something present, but I can use it to know whether or not my concentrations are going up and down just by the sound. So just by walking around, just listening, right? I have it in my pocket. I generally, what I do is I have it in my pocket, and I got the little snozzle hanging out in my pocket. and I'm just walking around. And if I were to somehow walk into something going up and down stairs, bringing it to the floor, it's going to let me know that, hey, like there's something here and you're getting towards the source.
Right. That's nice. I like that. Pro tip. Yeah.
Pro tip. And obviously, pro tip. And obviously, we are dealing with flammable material, acetone, rubbing alcohol, ethanol. Unless you are going to be ingesting them, they're not really that kind of toxic. You know, acetone over chronic long periods of time will, you know, can cause, you know, biological issues, but nothing that we're going to be seeing just kind of dealing with your occasional lab here and there.
Right.
So I'm going to go with bunker gear for them as well.
I concur. I concur. And SCBA, obviously. But yeah, so to wrap up this whole thing is that you're kind of getting the impression from us that it is a super duper simple operation. And it can be. It can seriously be a couple of pieces of PVC, some filters, and a Pyrex dish, and a couple of cans of butane. And you could be having a great weekend, you know, but you can also go up to these incredibly complex machines that that actually recycle the solvent, and they have entire high pressure sides and low pressure sides, commercial stainless steel, where they're processing lots of pot, and they're doing it at extraordinary efficiencies, like 95, 96, 97% extraction rates, which is stunning. You know, when you're doing the little drip out with the butane, maybe you get 50%, 60%. Oh, that's adorable. And you get a little pat on the head. When you're talking about these machines that you're paying tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, you're talking about major stuff. So all you got to worry about with a simple setup is the chemicals themselves. I will say on the commercial, when you get the big machines, the additional thing is, remember that these things have a lot of pressure. They could be very hot. And I'm talking about like peel your skin hot. They use caustics, they use acids, they use all types of things in there to maximize efficiency. So be careful when you're going in these things. And we're not even talking about booby traps. Like people, we talked about that in the last show about that stuff, but you know, they don't want people coming in there. So be careful of compressed gases, pressurized things in high heats in those commercial type things. So I think that's it.
Yeah, I think we're pretty good. And obviously if you walk in, there's tons of little butane bottles. That would be equipment. That would definitely make you go,
yeah,
what the hell's going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm tracking here.
All right. Well, it's 4:20 where we are, so we're going to go and enjoy your day.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.